There was an essay on the McGill errors, exactly about the global warming. And the thing that really concerns me, there is a blind spot on all these presentations, and that is that why isn't there some effort to do public transportation? I mean, in other words, and I was hoping that you would bring that up, because I was waiting for the time that you would. And this is something, look at all these people. We all came in cars from all over, and everywhere we go, we have to take our own cars. What's going on? I mean, what's the reason why there is that blind spot all over here?
Thank you. Very good.
Yeah. No, that's a huge part of the solution. You're absolutely right. You know, if you remember the chart, the biggest portion of our emissions come from transportation. A lot of the transportation planning issues happen at a local level. So, I don't know who here is. There probably are groups here that are working on it.
But I think it's an obligation, and the obligation of people like you who are speaking like this, to bring that on, because otherwise people just simply, you know, yes, here we are. And so, what is that? I mean, who is opposed to it? What's going on in this country where the public transportation is like worse than in any third world country?
Yeah.
Come on, people. Let's do something. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, excellent point.
We should make note of the fact that almost nothing in Governor Schwarzenegger's new budget has to do with rapid transit.
Yeah, just the opposite, actually, in the bond package.
So yeah. My question is, I was surprised when you mentioned that he had these far-reaching visions, but what is in the budget that, do you know what he's doing to get it where he wants it?
That's the question, and I don't know about the budget, but I know that in the Climate Action Team report, as drafted, there was a recommendation for a tax on gas. Basically, it's a public goods charge. It would be about a 1 cent charge on a gallon of gas, and we're waiting to see whether that's going to stay in. He's apparently wavering on that. So, yeah.
Along the same line, we heard for a while about increased use of rail, high-speed rail, that type of thing. And I'm wondering why that whole subject seems to be just disappearing. And what, if anything, that we should do about it?
You know, I am not a transportation person, so there might be someone here in the room that can... Mark! Mark Stout, why don't you answer that?
Hey, Aaron. Wonderful presentation. I did want to... There's kind of a strange dynamic with high-speed rail, because on Clean Air Action Day, the lobby day at the state capitol last year, we had a meeting with this and Assemblyman Mays' office here from Visalia, and he got, what, a 6% environmental vote? Room for improvement there. But one issue his office really wants to work on, where I think we find common ground with the environmental community, he really likes high-speed rail and is like, please help me with high-speed rail. So if there's people that are interested in working on pushing high-speed rail, here you got somebody that needs room for improvement on the environment, dying to work on some issue to get a little green merit badge, and high-speed rail is something he's excited about. If I put in a plug for another thing that Vasilia would be great. I coordinated the Seneca Valley's first solar homes tour for NorCal Solar Energy Association last October. It was last October 1st, there was 68,000 people went on solar home tours nationwide. And definitely this is one climate change tech fix sort of strategy that a lot of people are interested in. And if anybody would be interested in finding out more about doing a solar homes tour here in Visalia this coming October 7th, please see me after the talk, and I'd be glad to talk to you about that. Thanks.
I should know this information, but can you just tell us briefly about Union for Concerned Scientists and something about your background?
Oh, sure.
You're an air pollution specialist.
Yeah, I should have started with that. the Union of Concerned Scientists is a national organization with offices in Cambridge, D.C., and Berkeley, about 100 staff people. They started off working on nuclear weapons and the weapons proliferation issue, but now are focusing mainly on global warming. And I'd say about 45% of our members are scientists. The rest are concerned citizens. And I'm the California Outreach Coordinator. So I am not a scientist. I'm the person who takes what all of these scientists come up with, all their research and their policy analysis, and try to make something happen with it.
About how many of the UCS scientists are actually working, living here in California, obviously probably at Berkeley?
I don't know how many of them are at Berkeley, but I would say there's probably a good... Well, we have a scientist network here with about 3,500, 4,000 active scientists on it, but our membership in California is probably about 20,000. I don't know how many of those are scientists.
Well, but just the membership?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, to speak to the high-speed rail issue, I mean, a lot of us view the high-speed rail as really a double-edged sword, because then it turns the valley into a bedroom community for the urban area. What we really need more than high-speed rail is local mass transportation. We have it right in the city centers, but many of our people live out about in the county. Right now we have a new proposal for a 30,000 person community to be put in the foothills. All these people have to be driving around. This will be creating a lot more greenhouse gas for us. So all these things, anything we can do to reduce our use of fossil fuel is going to help with greenhouse gases.
Yeah, absolutely. And the San Joaquin Valley just was the first, actually, in the state to just pass a really great policy, an indirect source review policy, which requires new developments to either offset their pollution or avoid it altogether. So hopefully, new developments like that will be planned better in the future.
Have you given any thought to the possibility of global oil production peaking in the next few years? You know, like that could be, you know, a double-edged sword, you know, in some ways, and that it probably be good, and that, you know, if like oil production starts to go down, we're going to have to be more efficient in how we use it, and less greenhouse gases and so forth that way. But also, you know, it causes panic, and, you know, like in the short run, there'd probably be a temptation to gut environmental laws or, you know, like open everything up for drilling or, you know, or for coal mining and all kinds of other.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we saw some of that when the prices spiked after Katrina, that a lot of the clean air laws around the refineries here in California were just thrown out the window.
Can you address something that I think concerns a lot of lay people who aren't scientists, who don't read the studies, and that's the politicization of science. We've heard from the right that global warming is not a proven phenomenon, that it may be kind of a cyclical thing. And I guess my concern is, how do we not get into a thing where the left has their scientists and the right has their scientists and there's no scientific consensus?
Well, fortunately, in California, I think we're beyond that debate. Poll after poll shows that 80 to 90% of the populace believes global warming is happening, believes that it's a priority to deal with, and supports some of the most aggressive policies that have been put forward. And overall, most of the legislature, there are definitely exceptions, but I think the legislature, at least in California, has moved beyond the debate over whether this is real or not. So we're lucky. In other parts of the country, that debate is still going on. But one thing that you can point to is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which is a consensus, it's a UN body, a consensus of scientists from every country, including the National Academy of Sciences in the United States, Bush-appointed scientists who all, no question about it, agree that it's happening and it's caused by human factors.
I'm a little bit confused. Schwarzenegger has proposed this ambitious reduction in greenhouse emissions, but his mega bond issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, the vast majority of his works, more freeways and prisons, right? I don't see how that addresses that.
Yeah, no, it's a huge problem. Yeah, it is schizophrenic. We're gonna try to there's three different bond packages now moving through the legislature, and the environmental community is working very hard to either block or drastically amend these bond packages to make them much, much greener.
We should bombard the governor with letters, not emails, letters. He will listen to this. And the scientist on the right who opposes is Rush Limbaugh.
Marilee.
How will food production be affected by global warming?
In California?
Well, okay, especially in California, but in general as well.
Well, we're not really sure exactly how food production will be impacted. We know that water availability is going to decrease, possibly drastically. We know that weeds, pests, and diseases, the spread of diseases will increase. We know that because insects and pollination cycles are going to get off kilter, that could also have an impact. And because of temperature, a lot of crops won't be able to be grown where they are now. So there will have to be massive shifts in adaptation in order for agriculture to still produce at the levels that it does now in California. It's possible, but not likely, that agriculture will still be the economic engine that it is now. It's very likely that we'll suffer economic losses in that sector from global warming.
Do these graphs and things that you're showing us, do those take into account population growth? Because you cut pollution 50% and all this, and the population grows by 60%, it's going to make a small difference there.
Yeah, most of the models... Well, all the models are different. Some accounted for population growth through the end of the century. Some accounted for it only to 2050, and then some didn't account for it at all. So that you're right. That's a huge problem. And most of the graphs that I showed you have to be considered to be very conservative estimates because of that. Because as the population doubles or triples in the next 100 years, everything will get worse.
I was just thinking about alternate energy methods. I know that, like the solar panels now, there's a lot of rebates that we can get now for like one house. I believe after rebates, it's about $9,000 initial investment in order to run all the energy you need for that house. But it's still $9,000 up front. A lot of people don't have that. And with the doping and everything that's going on, advancement in germanium arsenide in solar panels and everything. I just wasn't sure if like we're gonna get to a place where we can actually say, okay, like these alternate methods are appealing enough so that we don't just rely on our cars and standard electricity.
Mark? Yeah.
If the solar industry were any busier, I'm pretty exhausted right now. I'm working for the Valley's largest installer in Fresno, and basically the manufacturing base is stripped out of supply for every solar panel manufacturer sold out for a year. In fact, George Bush is going to go visit one in Michigan on Monday. That was the big news in Detroit. But because the industry is so booming, In California right now with rebates, you'll go cash positive. If you have any consumption of electricity over $50 a month, you can be saving money as soon as you install solar and then pay the thing off for 15 years and have 15 years of free energy. And there's the reason why that the supply is so stripped out is that the cash flow is so good. People that are not environmentalists at all are doing it just for money savings. And it's great. The industry's booming, but in California, I'd say we're on 100% per year growth curve. And please, we need more panels. We need more silicon, solar grade silicon to be manufactured. It's in order to keep up with the rebates. So anyway, we're there. I mean, we have 5 to 7 year payback for PG&E territory right now for residential households. And you pay for your system in 7 years, and it's gonna last another 30. So, anyways, we're there. SB1 died in the legislature. We won't go into the partisan politics behind that, but an even bigger pot of money. The California Solar Initiative was passed by the California Public Utilities Commission. It's a $3.2 billion 11-year program, and that passed mid-January. And that's among other reasons why there's a big feeding frenzy, and it's a gold rush of solar right now.
It's one of the top three largest solar programs in the entire world, what we have in California. No, that's not a dumb question at all. It's sad. I mean, I don't want to scare people, but yes, the particulate matter levels in this area and the ozone levels can cause lung damage in children, and that can lead to asthma. Do you want to say anything, Teresa?
The lungs don't develop at the same rate for the air stream. So already they're solidifying way there. And then if the child is, say, running outside in bad air quality, where the ozone's high or the water's high, then they can get scar tissue. And then the scar tissue causes more damage, and the lungs definitely are seeing damage. And I feel so bad when kids are out there playing football and running track in bad air quality. I mean, there should be alerts not to do that. Air
well, a lot of schools now have the flag days, where if it's a red flag, the kids don't go outside. If it's a yellow flag, only some kids can go outside. And
I would ask all of you to get involved and go to the air district meetings. We go there. We work with Central Valley Air Quality Advocates. We work on air quality issues, MARCS and the CDAQ. And we need people like you to be there. At the air district meetings in Bakersfield, there's maybe 3 people there, Art Unger and a couple of other Sierra Club people. In Fresno, there's a hot spot. There's maybe 6 or 7. But in a big meeting, there's maybe 20 or 30 of us. And sometimes there's more of us than it is in the
school. Ma'am, would you stand up and tell us your name and your group, please?
My name is Teresa Ganda, and I work for California for Pesticide Reform. But I also work with Central Valley Air Quality Advocates and a lot of other organizations that work on air quality. And we do need help to clean up the air in the valley. We've made a lot of STRIDE. SB700 was where they lifted the agriculture exemption, and then just the other day the ISR, and so many other pollution-related issues that we do. And I can talk to you after the meeting on some of the issues and information.
Teresa, if you are interested in air quality, definitely talk to Teresa. Teresa's been highlighted on TV and won all kinds of awards, and she's one of the state's premier organizers and is a wonderful air quality advocate, and is trying to organize more people to get involved here in this area. So talk to her afterwards. Yeah, in the very back.
The biggest source of pollution is the vehicles, right?
Yes.
And so you announced some pretty ambitious plans, and we have the most ambitious plans, but I haven't heard any of the practical steps how that's going to be accomplished. When you talk about finger burning cars, I mean, if they burn petroleum products, they're emitting the exhaust. Now, are the renewable fuels, are they a viable alternative? Is there, I mean, what I imagine what you were getting at was that this discussion in September, or this thing going on in September? I think the article that I read. Anyway, that the politicians are going to talk about it, but I mean, what are they going to talk, what are they going to propose?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think you're talking about some of the bills that are going through and being debated, which will, the session does end in September. So, the way we see it is that clean car technology, there's many different levels. There's stuff that's in cars today that makes them cleaner, that could go in all cars, but it's not. And then there's hybrid technology. There's technology where you're still running on gasoline, but it's a little bit cleaner. That's sort of a stepping stone. Developing a hybrid, for example, is a stepping stone to developing the technology for a car that can run on a fuel cell or hydrogen fuel, which is also being developed. There's a bill in the legislature this session to set the criteria for green hydrogen. I mean, we don't want hydrogen produced by burning coal or from nuclear plants. We want renewable energy to produce the hydrogen so that can be used for cars in the future. I mean, that's a long way down the road. But there's also alternative fuels for the existing cars, and there are several bills coming up for either ethanol or biodiesel, cellulosic ethanol, some of the really clean forms of alternative fuel. So there's many different things that We know what to do today. We have the technology. We have the fuel recipes. We just have to force the automakers to build the cars.
But it seems like the federal government is not exactly cooperating.
No. That's why we have to do it at the state level.
Well, they just made the requirement for alcohol, part of a percentage of alcohol.
There's a meeting. There's a meeting this Wednesday at I believe 3 o'clock at T.W. Patterson Building in Fresno. If anyone would like to make this in regards to the mass transportation system.
In regards to the what?
Mass transit. And as far as I know, it's to the public, so I might be getting a lot of trouble right now. If you want more information about it, contact me out. But as far as I know, it's a meeting that's open to the public concerned about mass transit. And if you want to go.
At what time?
I'd like your emails that I can check. Sure. I think 3 Wednesday.
Can you tell us if you get more information about how the legislators are planning on addressing the issue of the reduced snowpack in the Sierra? I mean, we're in a big agricultural area. It seems like that could be a really good alliance with growers, knowing that this is going to really impact us in this area. Has there been talk about how they're going to address that?
The big study that's coming out has a whole series of recommendations for how to reduce emissions in order to save the snowpack. Some of them have to do directly with the agricultural sector. There are things that the growers can do to use less fuel and also to sequester carbon in the soil and in the plants that they're growing. So there's a set of agricultural solutions, and then there's a whole huge list of other policies that legislators will be addressing this session. But you're right that this issue makes for a very good alliance between environmentalists and agricultural producers. And I would love to talk to you more about that, because we're trying to build some alliances and have some roundtables with growers in the Central Valley in the next couple months.
Thank you.
Just to clarify on that snowpack thing, is that going to be because the snow will be coming down as rain, or will it be because is this going to be a dry climate?
Yeah, the models are show that there probably won't be that much change overall in precipitation. But you're right, most of the precipitation that we have will come down as rain instead of snow, and it'll run off immediately instead of being stored. And we'll have a problem with trying to capture that. There's not enough room in the existing reservoirs, and so a lot of it will end up running off and causing a lot of winter flooding.
I've heard everybody talk about the UFOs that cause the water position, but I haven't heard anybody talk about the pesticides that cause the pollution. And I think we have to face that fact, even though we're in an agricultural community, we have to face the fact that pesticide pollution is contributing terribly, especially to the groundwater, because no matter how much you save the snowpack, when it gets down there, it's going to be polluted with the pesticide, and you have to address that. What are they doing about that?
Teresa.
We have several lawsuits right now. I think I'm involved with, I'm the director of the Republic of Canada, we have a trademark, and it's for to reduce the VOCs and pesticide costs. And we're suing EPA and we're suing Department of Pesticide Regulation to get the numbers down of the pesticide.
Who is suing? Maybe three more questions and then write people down.
Slow down. So people can hear you. It's a committee for the well-being of Redmark. It's a little bitty organization, but we and Association of Irrigated Residents, the Tom Makers, the President of AIR, and we're suing with the help of Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment. We are suing the Department of Pesticide Regulation and Environmental Protection Agency to reduce the VOCs.
We're going to take like. Okay, we're going to take three more questions, and then we're going to break, and then we'll. You can come down and talk to Aaron down here and other. People and representatives from the various sponsoring groups.
Okay, I'm going to take three people that haven't spoken yet. Okay. One, two, three.
Hi, my name is Laura Holt, and I am an organizer with Environmental Defense and other groups, Central Valley Air Quality Coalition. And we have a contingent going up on March 8th to San Francisco to the EPA hearing. The administration is trying to decrease air standards, specifically particulate matter 10 microns, that's PM10. You may have read about that throughout, you know, that's what's getting in our minds, including fine particulate matter, PM2.5. Well, even the EPA scientists, the own scientists from EPA, have stated, don't decrease it. We need to increase it, but the administration's trying to decrease it. So throughout the nation, there's three sites, and we have one right here in San Francisco on March 8th, and there's a contingent. There's a coalition that's getting together, all different peoples and organizations. And if you're interested, you can contact me. I'll give you more information. You can speak, have your voice heard. There's openings. We have to also sign up, but there are openings for walk-ins, and so you can have your voice heard, like I said, as well as it's a learning experience. Here's the big EPA. You can find out how these hearings work and what's going on, and if you're interested, I'll be here afterwards.
It's very important for Valley people to be at that hearing because one of the things that they're trying to do is get rid of the PM, the particulate matter standards for rural areas, basically, just gut them. So, and there's going to be a lot of people flying in from all over the western region to speak at this hearing, so you'll meet some great people.
You had mentioned that, I forget the bill number, but a bill is in process right now with Willinette, the governor's policies to reduce certain levels by 80% by 20 years or whatnot. What type of, if any, watchdog measures are in effect for these type of laws, and what are the consequences if they aren't met?
Yeah.
By not environmental consequences, but who's going to fork over the dough to be fine?
Well, that's a very important question. And one of the components of this bill is a mandatory global warming emissions registration system. Right now, we don't even know who's emitting how much of these global warming gases. So they're setting up a registry. They're institutionalizing an existing registry, making it mandatory, and then probably one of the state agencies will then have enforcement authority, so they'll have legal authority to levy fines and enforce the cap. That will be part of the bill. Yes, last question.
Other than Dean Flores, the Democrat, I kind of question whether the two-party system can even accomplish what it needs to in Central California. So I'm wondering if this, is it possible that we'll be able to even pull this off with the current political system that we have, or is it time for a third party to really do it?
That's an excellent question, which I would love to discuss with you after the meeting. It could go on for a while. But I want to thank you so much for sticking around and all your great questions and all the work you're doing.
Now, before you go, despite what you read in the paper, this is not a COS-sponsored event. This was sponsored by the South Valley Peace Center and the four organizations co-sponsored, and we're having to pay for this hall. And so we greatly appreciate anything that you can help us out with. Uncle Bill Warner has some wonderful note cards. He's an antique toy collector. He's got these wonderful note cards, which you might want to look at.